Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Wednesday, September 21st, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it's actually the words typed out, Start Here. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. And his book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for a little over 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. And if you choose to listen to those, they can serve as a tutorial to help you get maximum benefits from the use of this tool in an efficient period of time. There are a host of other tools on that website, including but not limited to a worksheet to help you manage your stress, the stress of your mind, a worksheet to help you clarify communication and relationship, a worksheet to help you determine where and how you might have unwittingly created codependent relationships in your life, etc. And all of those worksheets are available absolutely free. Click the link, download them, print them off, and away you go. And if you have questions about any of those, that's why the internet show is here 5 days a week in its current format, 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. And we'd be happy to take your comments or your questions at 563-999-3581. 563-999-3581. Trying to stifle a sneeze there. And alternatively, you can send us an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And we'd be happy to entertain those comments, questions, answers, or testimonials. And then address them on the internet show, and as time allows, send you an email letting you know what day and time we responded to your email, and you can listen back to the archives, and it could be a back and forth ongoing conversation through email and archives, or you might make the time to call in live at 563-999-3581, as this caller has done. Area code 520, you're in the air. Who do we have?
This is Audrey speaking from Arizona.
Audrey, welcome. Long time no hear from you.
Things are well. Life is good.
How can we help you today?
Yes. I'd like your thoughts about illusions. I go to ACIM, the Course in Miracles group, and they speak about illusion. And oftentimes, people will say, oh, there is nothing out there. There is nothing there. I'm talking to myself. And my reality is, we are spiritual beings having a human. Now, please connect the thoughts about illusions to me. And thank you.
All right. Well, that's a wonderful question. It just so happens to tie in directly with what I was planning to talk about today. Yesterday, when I was doing the Way of Mastery, I started, and we're doing Audrey, I'm going to mute you because of the sound noise, but I will turn you back on after I've had some time to talk about this and see what your comments are. So yesterday I started the review of a lesson 21 in the Way of Mastery, and where I had left off on Friday was with the section titled Allow All Things. And I read that first paragraph, and I probably spent about 5 minutes on the first paragraph from that section. And the first paragraph, Audrey, I believe relates directly to what you're asking about illusion and reality, whether there is anything out there, whether I'm talking to myself, all of those things that you just said. So here's what that, well, to begin with, I'll go back over that paragraph again. But in the support group last night, Tuesday night support group, one of our members, who's a very bright woman, very intelligent, decidedly above average intelligence, after I went back and read this again in the group last night because of something that someone said, I read this paragraph again, and she said, I don't get it. I'm lost. Now remember, she's a very bright person. So when I'm talking to somebody and I'm speaking my native language and their native language, and it's something that makes sense, and they say, I don't get it, I know a strong emotional component has been activated in them. And that strong emotional component is blocking their ability to comprehend the English language, the words, the phrases, etc. So my plan coming into today's session was to spend as much time as necessary on this very concept. Here's the paragraph that was so baffling. The paragraph reads, become willing to be one who cultivates the ability to allow all things. And I talked about how this work, the Way of Mastery, or the entities that gave rise to it, they understand that we've been trained to resist most everything, to judge this versus that, to think my version of reality is right and your version is wrong, to say, this shouldn't be happening, this thing is bad, that thing is good, etc. And that's the opposite of allowing all things. So this work understands we've been trained to judge and to think about separation and to compare ourselves to others and have somebody who's better and somebody who's worse and somebody who's right and somebody who's wrong and somebody who's good and somebody who's bad. This work says become willing to start to do the work to cultivate within yourself the ability to allow all things. Because you've been trained into judging and separating and thinking that what your senses show you about pictures and sounds and ideas about the outside world, you're trained to believe that the pictures your mind is showing you are the truth about your life and the people around you. And these great spiritual teachings are trying to get us to understand, look, each and every one of us is simply making our best guess in each moment about what's going on around us. And that guess that we generate is 80% made up of our past experiences. So none of us are perceiving with total clarity and 100% accuracy. You can look at the video by Anil Seth where he talks about the science that they're doing in researching perception and how each and every one of us is hallucinating our ideas of the world. We are creating our own perceptions that are separate from the actuality of life. So the text reads, become willing to be one who cultivates the ability to allow all things. And then it says, the mind that is free can do this. The mind that is free can allow all things. The mind that is imprisoned cannot allow all things. Because the mind that is imprisoned because it thinks and it insists that whatever pictures it creates are about something outside of itself that needs to change. But that it and the pictures it creates and the way it creates it doesn't need to change. Verbatim, the way it's read in the text reads, for the mind that is imprisoned is so because it insists that what it perceives should become different in itself, but that the perceiver need not change. The mind that is imprisoned believes the stories and pictures it creates from its perception, and whenever that is unpleasant, or the mind decides it doesn't like it or doesn't want it, that mind insists that what it is perceiving needs to change, but that it, as a mechanism of perception, a process of guessing, the process of creating an illusion, a hallucination or a delusion, doesn't need to change. And the text goes on and says, and that is the very essence of imprisonment. So here's the issue. There's a thing called there's a lesson from the Course in Miracles that's called What is the World? And Dr. Michael Rice has a very enlightening video on this, and you might even be able to find it on his YouTube channel. And it is a very well thought out way to approach what is happening when people in a Course in Miracles support group or a discussion group, or a study group they call them sometimes, when they start arguing about, is there actually a world outside of the person? And Dr. Michael Rice talks about how within the text of the Course in Miracles, when he studies it, he has determined that the Course in Miracles is talking about the world, and it uses the same word, it uses lowercase w, world, through the whole thing, And yet sometimes when it uses the word world, it's referring to the pictures that we create inside our minds with perception. And sometimes it's referring to the actuality of life that the Creator created. And so Dr. Michael Rice, in his lecture, What is the World? Of Course in Miracles, What is the World? He tries to map out very carefully using the context of the Course in Miracles itself, in which cases the Course in Miracles is saying the world, referring to the pictures in my mind that I'm creating with my perception, and how the picture that I create can be different than your picture or Larry's picture or Barb's picture or Anna's picture, how each of us is creating a separate, quote, world, close quotes, within our perception, and where the Course in Miracles is talking about the world as the Creator created it. And Michael Rice uses the term actuality to refer to what really is outside of the human mind and outside of the human perception. So the Course in Miracles has lines in it that say things like, perception was made as an attack on God. In other words, I am not able to have direct, conscious, 100% accurate experience of the world around me because I'm limited to what comes into my senses, the five senses, and I've been trained to focus more on what you might call the hard data that comes in through my eyes, my ears, my sense of smell and taste and touch, and that I don't see past the veil of perception. I don't see the shimmering radiance of the creative energy that underlies everything and everyone that I interact with. And I don't see that because I've been trained out of perceiving it. I've been trained in my culture and with the language of separation that I've been taught to think of myself as separate from everyone and everything. And I've been taught to focus most of my energy on the hard or the solid or the very obvious inputs of my five senses. And I've been distracted away from seeing around the edges, feeling, sensing, intuiting, the creativity, the spiritual, the ethereal energies, which many people think infants are born accessing. And so rather than getting this 100% clear picture of actuality, we get a very distorted image within our mind of limitation and separation and smallness and being nothing but the physical body, etc. So this Way of Mastery segment on allowing all things stirs up all kinds of stuff in my mind. Like there's a quote from, it's been attributed to Einstein that says, you cannot solve a problem at the level of mind that created that problem, or at the level of mind that has determined that there is a problem, right? So at the level of mind where I'm relying completely on my five senses of smell, sight, sound, taste, and touch, and I'm using those senses and I say, you're wrong, that's bad, this world around me is evil, there's a crisis going on, etc., I will never be able to resolve that issue at that level. I'm going to need to step above, outside of the mind that judges, outside of the mind that labels, outside of the mind that relies exclusively on the five senses, and ask to be shown a different way to look at, perceive, intuit, picture, understand what's going on. And so the next paragraph here says, one who cultivates that ability to allow is cultivating in truth the very act of forgiveness. Now, in this book, they define forgiveness as dismantling a negative perception. In other words, seeing past the veil of perception, learning to see with more than just the physical eyes. The text goes on and says, this forgiveness is releasing the world from the mind's insistence that the mind's perceptions be held as right. This is releasing from itself the need to hold on to its perceptions. And therefore, it allows all things. It trusts all things. It embraces all things. And that's how it transcends all things. We are taught to judge. We are taught to trust only our five senses. We are taught to compare our conclusion to someone else's conclusion, and then try to decide who's right and who's wrong. Part of what this teaching has been getting us, trying to get us to do from the first lesson, is to recognize, to step back and question everything we've been taught, and to recognize that there's a process of perception, this active screening out of certain things and focusing in on other things and attributing meaning to other things and ignoring other things, that has been the mechanism which has created our experience of life from the beginning of our awareness. And so it sums that up in this first axiom where it says, nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. Well, that's not what we're taught. So right there, there's a culture shock. There's an airbag going off in our face. There is this, wait a minute, what do you mean? I'm only experiencing what I've chosen to create. That's not right. I didn't choose this car accident. I didn't choose this low bank account. I didn't choose this person divorcing me after 15 years. And yet, what the text tries to walk us through lesson after lesson is, while I may not have created the external experience of the car accident, I may not have created my partner's desire to get a divorce, I am going to create my experience of those interactions with the external world. And unless I learn how I'm creating that experience, unless I train myself to observe what happens every time I judge, when it gets into the third lesson, it says, if you could understand what happens even in the cells of your body every time you judge, the cells of your body stop working. Right? This is like the cellular biologist, Bruce Lipton, where he says, your cells have only two modes of existence. One is health and growth, and the other one is shutdown and defense. And just before this internet show started today, I had somebody send me a new article that was written where it says the cell danger response is a universal response to environmental threats or injuries, and once it's been triggered, healing cannot be completed until the choreographed stages of that cell danger response are returned to an updated state of readiness. That's validating what Bruce Lipton said when he said, your cells only have these two modes of existing, health and growth, in which the cell can take in nutrition, repair worn out parts, and eliminate waste, or shut down in defense, in which state The cell does not take in nutrition, it does not repair worn out parts, and it does not eliminate waste. So if the cell stays in that shutdown and defense mode too long, it starves to death, drowns in its own waste, and it's a mess. There's decay, there's loss, there's lack of function. What Bruce Lipton found out was every cell has a receptor on it for my mind energy. So I might be sitting in the most pristine environment there is. Crystal clear water, fresh air, no toxins, no threats of any kind. But in my mind, I can be thinking, oh my gosh, this is horrible that so-and-so has rejected me and wants a divorce, and my life is never going to be this. And I create a sense of threat or danger or constriction or contraction, and that mind energy where I'm choosing to not allow the flow of life, when I'm choosing to resist it and say it's bad and wrong, the mind energy I create tells my cells go into shutdown and defense mode. And now, instead of the flow of life and the creative energy expanding, I'm creating an experience for myself of grief and loss and bitterness and resentment. So, is there something outside of us? Yes. Are we creating an experience that is independent of that? Yes. Can we move more toward open, allowing, trusting, embracing, surrendering to the flow of life? Yes, and that's what a book like The Course in Miracles and The Way of Mastery is offering us the invitation to do. So once again, this paragraph reads, become willing to be a person who chooses to cultivate the ability to allow all things. There's an understanding in that statement that you are not going to be good at this when you read this paragraph. You will have been trained to the opposite of this. You will be trained to judge, to think people from that nation are not as good as people from that nation. People with this skin color are better or worse than people with that skin color. People who have money and shower every day are better than people who have less money and don't shower as often. Pick any category of labeling, whether it's politics, religion, place of geography, cultural background, musical taste. All of these are artificial, arbitrary delineations of separation that we have been trained to give value to within our minds. And as we do that, we create an experience of the world inside our minds that doesn't exist anywhere but in our minds. And there is a field of energy that we interact with, that we are part of, that we're part of the flow of. So that is what the Creator created. And that is the capital W world, as Dr. Michael Rice offers it. And the lowercase W world is the world of perception that I create inside my head. And that's how it can be so radically different from yours and 17 other people watching the same event. And what we're called to do is learn to allow all things, which drops the perception and the judgment, and it gives us a closer approximation of perceiving the truth of life as the Creator created it. And what it says here is, allowance follows on the heels of desire, desire being this energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in each moment. For when you desire the kingdom above all things, when you desire the ability to see the world accurately as it truly is above all things, then you have no choice but to discover that you must allow the world to be as the world is. And here's the tricky part in the next paragraph. It says, for you have not known how the world is. You have only known your perceptions of it. So here is that truth coming in again. Each of us is creating our best guess, hallucination, illusion, delusion, but it's our best guess about what's really going on in the world around us. Because we don't get to have, through our five senses, full body immersion experience. We only get a tiny fraction of awareness about the tiny fraction of what's going on that hits our senses. And we can't have that, what Michael Rice would call, the spiritual faculty of true perception, when all we're relying on is how we've been trained to interpret the information through our senses. For you have not known how the world is. You have only known your perceptions of it. So what do they recommend? How do I break out of that cycle? The comforter will heal those perceptions. And all that is required is your little willingness to let your perceptions be changed. Ask to be shown. Ask to be taught by life. Ask to be taught by the Holy Spirit. Ask to see the world as your Creator created it. And then soften and allow yourself to drop any resistance and train yourself to do what this section invites us to do, which is to allow all things. Audrey, does that answer your question at any way, at any level?
All I can say is, wow, lots of meat, and yes, it does. And when I'm going to look at Michael Rice's, I'm going to search for that,
What is the world? Yeah, I think you can find it on his YouTube channel.
Yeah.
So I think he has close to an hour video talk on that.
I'd like to say that when I use the word, I should, I have to, I ought to, I must, when I use those words, that is conditioning through habituation, and I keep myself in prison of the world with the lower case. But when I use the words such as I choose, I will, I desire, that's when the world with the capital W is with freedom. Is that?
I would have to agree. What I tell people is, and frequently they'll use the word should or should have, et cetera, in my sessions, and I will ask them if they have a time machine in their purse or at home that they're hiding from me. And when they say no with a chuckle, I say, well, then let's not talk about should, because you don't have a time machine. You can't go back and redo it. So this is wasted energy and unnecessary negativity. Now, if you would like to talk about, you know what? Here's what I did the last time. Here were the results. I would prefer not to have those results again. So the next time this happens, I will try this. I will act in this way. I'm all for that. Because that gives me the ability to respond differently the next time. That's the tool of response-ability. But within that tool, there is no reference to guilt or blame or judgment or shame. It's simply a recognition of what is and a recognition of what are my options to choose differently the next time.
So we're talking about how does one respond versus react. React is in what I would say prison. I keep myself in prison when I react, because I'm not, I mean, some equanimity or neutrality. I'm passing judgment on it.
Yes. And often when we get into this discussion, one of the next things that happens when people are starting to talk about allowing all things and the lesson says allow all things, then somebody comes along and says, wait a minute, are you telling me that I should never do anything, that I should just sit like a bump on a log? And if we breathe and soften and recognize that whatever the emotion is that is behind my saying a statement like that or asking a question like that, and I soften, I realize, oh, I seem to be resisting. I seem to be in tightness or tension. Let me first soften the tension within me and or dissipate the negative emotional energy that I'm generating, and then let me ask again. What might they mean? How might things be entirely different if I learned to allow all things and I don't jump to the conclusion that they're telling me to just sit like a bump on a log and not do anything? What's in that middle ground? Well, one way to talk about the middle ground is, instead of seeing something or believing that I see something in the world, judging it as bad or wrong, and then starting to think how I'm going to run away from this or charge after this or beat this person up or bribe or seduce this person to change or try and initiate change in this way or that way. Instead of all of that, what if I breathe and soften and ask to be shown from something that's outside of that logical process of my thought, that intellect that the Way of Mastery has told us has been shoved full of trivialities and beliefs? What if I ask to be shown from something outside of that how I can interact in the world in this moment, how I can bring a new presence to energies that once defeated me, how I can be a blessing to myself and others, how I can use this ability to focus my mind energy in a way that will create ease, respect, gratitude, appreciation, the extension of the good, the holy, and the beautiful in this moment for me and everyone else I interact with. And what if I step into that process and allow myself and my actions and thoughts to be informed by that process of asking and receiving, how I might wake up and realize what many of these spiritual teachings tell us, I end up being even more active than I was when I was judging this is bad and that is good and this is wrong and that is right and our team is better and this person's God is silly and my concept of the divine is the right one, etc. So if I can soften and breathe and step into what this book would tell us is a divine ignorance, I could step into this practice of allowing. I can step into what this book tells us is the Christ mind, which does not hold knowledge. It does not hold judgments. It does not do an active process of judging. It is this wide open, free-ranging, full spectrum perception which allows to understand, to see, to feel the shimmering radiance of the creative energy moving through the Christ mind and moving through everyone and everything that the Christ mind interacts with.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to ask one other question. And I was in a group last night, a Zoom group, and a person asked, what is the Holy Spirit? Define the Holy Spirit. And my answer was, it's an experience, but I couldn't put it into words. So I'd like you to expand and answer, what is the Holy Spirit?
Okay, so the Holy Spirit right now is just words, right? And right now they're words in the English language. And the words in the English language, as in any other language, only have the meaning that an individual human mind holds for that word. So if you were from Russia and I said, oh, that's all gobbledygook, and you'd never heard the word gobbledygook, you wouldn't know what I was saying or what I meant by that. So to begin with, the word Holy Spirit in the English language has all of these different meanings that many of us have been trained into. In the Catholic Church, they talk about it as part of the Holy Trinity of God, God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit. In the ancient Aramaic text, the word that was translated into something different in Greek and then something different in Latin and something different into English as spirit, in the ancient Aramaic language, it meant breath. It meant an elemental force, like the breath. Why is your breath an elemental force? Because it happens automatically without your thinking about it, just like your heartbeat is an elemental force, just like gravity is an elemental force, just like wind is an elemental force. So there are these elemental forces. These are things that are just a part of the process of creation. They happen in a flow. You can't stop them. You can't, you know, initiate them. They're just there. So Ruka is that word for this elemental force. And Ruka Dakudsha is the word in the ancient Aramaic for an elemental force specific to humans, which means it is in every human being. And what it is an elemental force that's there to break off the effects of the errors in thought and guide you to truth and happiness if you simply ask to be shown. Ruka Dakucha, the breath, the divine breath of life itself, the holy breath, the life-giving breath, etc. So Holy Spirit, as it comes from the ancient Aramaic, is your internal connection to, you might call it the Christ mind, you might call it God the Father, you might call it the one mind, you might call it the God source, you might call it your creator, you might call it light, you might call it love. But the word Ruka Dakucha means this elemental force specific to humans that is in you, in every human being, that will give you access to a divine wisdom, inspiration, creativity, if you just ask to be shown. So in other words, if you quit thinking so hard with the conscious logical mind and you put your conscious logical mind over here on the shelf, which is one of the things we do every time we do a reality management worksheet, we cancel the goal that the conscious logical mind has come up with. We cancel the thoughts that are generating the negative emotions that the conscious logical mind has come up with. We put that on the side and we ask to be shown the hidden part of our own mind that's actually creating the upset. Who and what we are asking might be called the Holy Spirit. You might call it your unconscious. You might call it your connection to the divine. But it doesn't have a physical substance. It isn't an external disembodied spirit the way so many people like to talk about it. I was visited by the Holy Spirit, or the tongues of fire were, you know, visited upon the apostles as this external force. In the ancient Aramaic text and understanding of those words, and the colloquialisms and the idioms that gave rise to it, it was not about an outside force. It was about an internal connection to the life-giving force that keeps your heart beating and your breath moving, and which has connection to an intelligence that can be your guidance. So you can ask to be shown. And in this very text we're reading, The Way of Mastery, it says, please welcome the Great Comforter as your best friend and decide to run every decision by the Comforter, by the Holy Spirit. So you're out driving in your car and you ask, well, good buddy, well, Holy Spirit, well, Great Comforter, should I go left or should I go right here? Should I take the toll road to get where I'm going or take the back streets? And then just trust when you ask that, that whatever little impulses or flow of energy that go through you that you end up doing, it's going to be just fine. And over time, we can practice the asking and the listening. And we can strengthen our habit of being in the moment and asking to be shown, rather than being in the moment, battling with our mind and all of our thoughts and all of our judgments, trying to figure out what should be our next course of action. So that would be my understanding of this dynamic that we're trying to tap into, called the Great Comforter or the Holy Spirit, and a little bit of the history of how it became known as a disembodied spirit outside of ourselves.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. And there's lots and lots of pearls of wisdom, which I heard, and I will integrate. Thank you.
Well, you're entirely welcome and deserving. And remember, this show will be available on the archives. I greatly appreciate the call, Audrey. Thank you for calling. Many blessings. I will remind us that this, one of the gifts of this show and the technology is that soon after 1 o'clock today, this show will be available on the archives. And I'm not quite sure exactly what all I said, but I heard a wow from Audrey, so I'll go back and listen to it myself to see what might be in there. So our calling number is 563-999-3581, and we've got about 10 minutes left before the second hour. Area code 541, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Celinda.
Welcome, Celinda.
I thoroughly enjoyed your conversation with Audrey, and she was asking questions that really helped me further my perceptions and my intentions to teach only love and be only love. I would like to share, this is just a funny little thing that I have come into that works for me. I've come to see Rucha as my nanny. She's my mommy, in a way, my first teacher. And that Rahma is more like the daddy. And this, when I put it in my poem there, I said, you know, awake, dear will, by which I trust Ruha's nurture my fears to bust. And so I just thought I'd share that in case Audrey got a chuckle out of it, or you did. But it certainly has helped me in my trusting process and my willingness process. And also at the same time, I hope I'm in a healing crisis, because I think all my alligators are coming up at once. And I'm seeing more and more my negativity, my judgmentalism that I don't even realize is that. And so I'm very grateful to this program and to your services and Michael and Jeannie's services and Audrey's and Magda's and Susan's and Anne's and all of the rest of us who jump on the show and share and ask questions. Thank you.
Well, you're most welcome and deserving. Thank you for sharing the poem, and I'll look forward to your next call with comments. So we've got about 9 minutes left. I'm not going to get back into the reading. I'm just going to let it sit. The second hour today is going to be a recording of the Why Book Club. Why again? Book Club, the first hour. That's been recorded by Michael and Jeannie. I think it's from the international book club call they have going. I'm not sure. But they are otherwise occupied today. So we have some time, about 8 minutes. If somebody wants to comment or question about what we've discussed so far today and about what it means to allow all things and whether or not that makes sense to step into allowing, and instead of thinking that that's going to put me like a wet noodle thrown against the wall or laying on the couch doing nothing, how it might actually lead to me being even more active than I've ever been before in my life and more satisfied with, more pleased with the consequences of the actions I take. If I think about allowing all things and asking to be shown, if I think about it as I'm going to act, but I'm going to ask for another source of insight, intuition, or inspiration before I act, rather than being driven by the intellect and the negative emotional states that the intellect frequently generates when it pours its mind energy into a pattern of thought that's negative or judgmental. So I can soften, I can breathe, I can allow, and ask to be shown. And then, as most people who've done this have reported, they end up being quite active, and they end up being inspired. And being inspired is entirely different than being driven or compelled or obsessing about something. So, all right, no one else has a hand up. I'll just assume that that's good for now. And I will start the second hour. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And this is the second hour, the Why Book Club Hour.
This work did not source from its author. It is a synthesis of a body of work that has existed on planet Earth for thousands of years and has come forward from the interaction, the ideas, and the love of many wonderful people who've been my teachers and my support system. Deep gratitude and thanks for your caring. You are in my heart for eternity. Appreciation to all of you, known and unknown, who've contributed to and supported this work. Is this book for you? Have you ever had conflict in your relationships, attempted the geographic cure, tried unsuccessfully to change others? Have you ever had thoughts like, why is this happening to me again? Why are they doing this to me again? Why am I doing this to myself again? Why can't life just cooperate? This book presents practical tools for change. People who participate in our workshops report significantly improved relationships, creativity, finances, and eating habits. Many say their health and energy levels are better and that their mental functions and emotional stability are enhanced. We are told that victimhood and addictions drop away, spiritual health increases, and peace of mind becomes their normal and natural state. Please read this book for an overview before focusing on its subtle points. It takes time to build the brain cells for significant change to take place and to understand some of the ideas that will be presented in this work. Brain cells are the body's storage system for information And building brain cells refers not to building physical structure, but to storing information for future recall. Using the suggested tools will answer questions, fill in the blanks, and open the far-reaching implications of this work. Like any new language, this material may be confusing at first. It might be all Greek to you. A learning curve is normal with any new information. Unraveling old patterns and teaching your mind new ways to function takes time. Beware the tendency of the mind to reject what is inconsistent with your current beliefs. I suggest that you set aside anything that does not fit your thinking and see how those pieces work as you build new information into brain cells. Invest the time and you will be amazed at what you will comprehend from these pages. After intense interaction, it will feel as if a mental switch is thrown and understanding falls into place. To reap endless benefits from this work does not require belief, understanding, or agreement. The skeptic who dares simply put the pen to the paper and actually uses these tools will produce dramatic, life-changing results. A quote I enjoy is one from a gentleman named Marcel Proust, who lived back in the 1800s and early 1900s, and he said, "The challenge of life consists not in exploring new landscapes, but in developing new eyes." As a result of completing this text, the reality structure in your mind will change. Life will be seen with new eyes. This book will seem to change, but of course, it remains the same. Your perception of this material and the world will shift as new levels of application and meaning unfold. This book is designed to be a source of clarity and empowerment now and in the future. To receive full benefit from its design, customize this book by writing in it. Please write, scribble, express yourself, feel, think, get messy, be elegant. Contemplate, create, fabricate, reason, analyze, compose, draw, play, love, reflect, get crazy, get sane. Surprisingly, as you use these tools, aspects of life that once seemed miserable will become enjoyable. For instance, if you have a pattern where it seems you have no choices in life, use of the tools transforms those times into an empowering opportunity to learn choice. For some, their rage, grief, or fear seems uncontrollable. With tools, surfacing the uncontrollable becomes an opportunity to gain freedom and to develop joy, strength, and aliveness through the healing of destructive energies. You may find yourself yelling at or arguing with this book, or me. Please be gentle. Talk or scream if necessary. It can be an important step into sanity. This manual is designed to bring up and support the healing of any energy in you that undermines aliveness. During this process, you will encounter everything in your mind, including enormous love. Richard, the character in this book, represents a composite of 1,000 conversations with real people. Any resemblance to people you know is purely intentional and highly probable. If he triggers issues and feelings for you that you would prefer to avoid, great. Be aware that your healing journey is about to take another step. If you identify with him, this text offers you ample space to look at yourself. Beware the tendency to think that he or words on a page could possibly be responsible for anything you feel. However, he may give you some opportunities to heal. The dialogue between myself and the troubled Richard is a fast-paced, nurturing, and enlightening dialogue. You'll be gripped by the way he unravels the blocks that keep him from receiving the love for which he yearns. You will cheer as he rebuilds his understanding of the dynamics of his life, his confused childhood, and his muddled, seemingly hopeless relationships. You will join him in learning step-by-step tools that will enhance your life, and you don't need to be in turmoil or upset for your life to get better. People from all over the world, including those who have created wonderful lives for themselves, have benefited from refining their life skills by using these tools. This process requires courage and will not always be Dr. Feelgood. However, the rewards and results will impact you and your family in wonderful and beautiful ways for eternity. Blessings, love, and support on your journey. And these are some of my notes that I decided to include as a foreword to the book. This body of work presents tools which can be used to manage your mind, body, relationships, and life. The first decades of my life, I lived without them. Approximately 25 years ago, as the result of the need to heal myself, I searched for tools with which I could unload the burdens I had accumulated. This book is one of the results of that search. This work is not the product of any curriculum. It is written from my own experience and is offered with sincere humility. I know of no book from which inner work can be learned, though thousands of books have been written about it. Acquiring this knowledge is a process. None of what appears on these pages is original, save the synthesis of the material and some of the conclusions for which I take full responsibility and invite your input. Nothing herein should be construed as medical advice, as each idea is intended for support of the reader's spiritual process and self-healing. Using these tools calls for a different mindset than the all-too-common victim or hero attitude and requires time, work, and willingness. The tools work. The rewards are extraordinary. Take the time to build the foundation and understand the philosophy of this work, and you will create a toolbox which makes these tools for life usable. Your life is about to change. The amount of material covered in this book is enormous, and rarely would it be possible to comprehend it all in one reading. To you, the reader, I suggest digest slowly. Be patient. 10 years from now, on the 20th or 90th reading, due to the nature of this work, this book will say many new things to you. I suggest you read as much of the text as makes sense to you and do the worksheet process. If you lose the train of thought or confusion surfaces, go back and do the worksheet. This book is not meant to be grasped in one reading. Many people find that a combination of the written course material and the audio or videotapes helps them grasp this information more quickly. I realize this may sound like a bit of a commercial, but we found that exposing people to this work through as many different senses as possible helps them integrate and put the tools to use more quickly. When you see this workshop on video or hear it on cassette tape, it is almost as though it produces a three-dimensional or a cellular comprehension. It is a difficult effect to explain and even more difficult to achieve through a linear presentation, such as happens with written material. The goal of this text is to provide a theoretical framework from which to view life differently. Above all, I wish to stress the simplicity of the process you're about to engage in, though it may appear complex at first. Truth is complex to a complex mind, and simple to a simplified mind. I understand that scientific convention and the rational mind require that I cite references for each new statement. I have chosen to bypass convention. I will make many statements that are based solely on my observations after 25 years of doing this work. I invite you to disbelieve everything I say and test it for yourself. Verification will come from the fact that you will find the tools work. I invite correction and feedback on this material and present what I consider to be useful observations, even though they do not fit convention. I am in agreement with Albert Einstein, who said, "One thing I have learned in a long life, that all our science measured against reality, and in these terms, actuality, is primitive and childlike." The scientific method provides a platform, as it were, from which to view the world. Any theory breaks down where its foundation is flawed and becomes provable from within its own errors. There was a time when everyone knew the world was flat. Thousands died of scurvy years after nutritional deficiency was known to be at least part of that disease, and limes were proposed as a solution. The first physician to suggest that medicine men spread disease with dirty hands was scorned as a fool. Many so-called scientific minds resist change. Scientific conventions seem to change only when the old beliefs die. You will hear a lot about the law of love in this book. It is the guardrail on the highway of reason. Information available to a mind is limited by the mindset of the thinker. Do you see all the things you love about a person when anger rears its head? No, we are cut off from our loving thoughts by anger, cut off from the law of love. The intellect, because of the way our mindset limits available information, can logically take you anywhere its foundation is set to go. It can justify anything up to and including murder. Love, as a condition in the mind, inoculates the intellect against foolish and senseless behavior. Lack of awareness of the law of love is the recipe for insanity, because without it the mind must operate under the rules that produce insanity. The law of love is the only pathway to peace of mind, which is a prerequisite to sanity and happiness. The goal of this work is summed up in the story of a child of 4 who had shown an interest in geography. One day her mother cut up a map of the world to make a puzzle, thinking it would keep the little girl busy for a few days. 15 minutes after receiving the map, the little girl had assembled the puzzle. Her mother was shocked. She couldn't believe it. How did you put the puzzle together so quickly? Even I couldn't have done that. The girl replied, "Well, Mom, I noticed when you were cutting out the map of the world, there was a picture of a little girl on the other side. When I put the little girl together, the whole world came together." Enjoy. A quote from the front of the book from Henry David Thoreau, a quote we entitled The Dilemma. "The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. What is called resignation is confirmed desperation. From the desperate city you go into the desperate country and have to console yourself with the bravery of minks and muskrats. A stereotyped but unconscious despair is concealed even under what are called the games and amusements of mankind. To be awake is to be alive. I never met a man who is quite awake." And again from Henry David Thoreau, a quote we title The Solution. "If you advance confidently in the direction of your dreams and endeavor to live the life you have imagined, you will meet with successes unexpected in common hours. You will pass an invisible boundary. If you have built castles in the air, your work need not be lost. That is where they should be. Now, put the foundation under them." And again, from the front of our book, "Life with Tools, Life Without Tools." Life with tools is awakening and delight. Information with tools is power. Power with tools is service. Relationship with tools is interdependence. Knowledge with tools is safety. Commitment with tools is a blessing. Abundance with tools is easy. Health with tools is natural. Learning with tools is education. Ambition with tools is accomplished. A world with tools is peaceful. Having tools and using them leads to aliveness. Life without tools is sleep and hell. Information without tools is impotence. Power without tools is dictatorship. Relationship without tools is codependence. Knowledge without tools is dangerous. Commitment without tools is hopeless. Abundance without tools is loss. Health without tools is impossible. Learning without tools is chaos. Ambition without tools is corruption. A world without tools is war. Having tools and not using them is a life without tools. You're invited to copy, share, live, teach, and support this work freely. For additional copies of this book, it can be downloaded freely from our website, www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. For ordering more copies of this book or our tapes, our toll-free number is 877-949-2424. That is 877-WHY-AGAIN. Our address is Route 3, Box 3280, 3280, Theodosia, T-H-E-O-D-O, S as in Sam, I-A, Theodosia, Missouri, M-O, 65761. A part of the way we support our work is through the sale of our products. Inviting people to purchase copies of this tape would be appreciated. And if people aren't in a position to purchase the tapes, please copy and share it with them freely. Invite them, if they're in the position to and benefit from this work, to support us. Our commitment is to take these tools to every mind on the planet. We invite your support. Thank you. Richard, a successful man in his late 30s, was on his way out west following the breakup of another marriage when he called early one morning.
"I just finished reading the book, The Celestine Prophecy, by James Redfield. The friend who gave it to me told me about your work, and he suggested I give you a call when I got to Springfield. He said that you might have some answers for me and help me make sense of things. Now, I don't know. Maybe it's a waste of time for us to meet. But my life is such a mess. I'm really desperate.
Springfield is an hour and a half drive northwest of Heartland, where we do our intensive workshops. I had a few days between finishing our summer season and leaving to go on tour, so I invited Richard to meet with me later that morning. He agreed. It was a clear, crisp day, and the leaves were taking on the fall colors. As I watched him climb from his car, Richard appeared taller than I'd imagined. He was wearing jeans and a navy blazer over a faded blue T-shirt and running shoes instead of the mountain boots I'd expected for someone traveling to the West. He appeared as if he could fit in anywhere and be at home with almost anyone. His face showed intelligence and sensitivity, but carried obvious traces of sadness. The slump of his shoulders indicated what appeared to be sizable emotional burdens. His tales of broken relationships and marriages started before we even settled into the house. Typical of many of us, before we finally looked for alternatives to the way we've been taught to live, Richard expressed frustration, anger, and fear. He seemed to flounder in his pain, using words I have come to know are born in the abuse we visit upon ourselves and others when we blame them. There was an uncertainty in his voice and what seemed to be a controlled anger bordering on violence. I interpreted this to be a product of tremendous frustration and feeling out of control, issues I encounter often among the individuals with whom I work.
Sometimes I feel so hopeless. I wonder if there really are any answers.
Sounds like things are pretty tough for you right now. How about taking a deep breath and just being still for a moment? Fortunately, these things pass. We have some powerful tools to assist in speeding up the process and assuring a future that unfolds more easily and peacefully. Has anything like this ever happened to you before? Have you ever felt any of these feelings previously? Richard admitted that many times he'd experienced these same feelings of rage and went on to describe the circumstances surrounding several relationships that had ended abruptly. He related his belief that no matter what he did or how he acted, relationships and life were hopeless. He explained that he was moving again to escape the painful memories that haunted him in each city that had been his home. Clearly, he felt victimized. He was alone and confused about what was going on in his life. His dilemma was not knowing what to do. He was afraid of repeating his mistakes. This prevented him from making real choices. At the same time, he was defensive about his past having anything to do with the present. He made it perfectly clear that he wanted only to talk about what was going on in his life now, not something that happened years earlier. I suggest you notice, Richard, that each situation in your life has one thing in common. Every time it happens, you're there. You're the common factor. You play a part, consciously or unconsciously, in every event of your life.
Are you telling me that I wanted those things to happen to me?
Wanted? No. Participated in? Yes. When you can see and take responsibility for your part in events, things will change. Responsibility is not a weight to carry, but a key to reclaiming your power.
Right. So everything's my fault. And if I just accept blame and admit that I'm guilty, then everything will be fine. Is that it? Is that your point? I'm not to blame? If you want to blame somebody, blame them. I've been the victim too many times. I'm not going to let this happen to me again.
Richard's teeth were clenched. His shoulders were rigid as he glared at me through unblinking eyes. I thought to myself, if his mind is as closed as his body language suggests, my work is definitely cut out for me. Looks like maybe you're closing up, Richard. Take a breath. I'm here to support you. My words were take responsibility, not you're to blame. This work is about releasing guilt and blame by seeing your own patterns and healing what is in us that sets up those patterns. My goal is to assist you in recognizing, dealing responsibly with, and undoing your part in each painful situation in your life, and learning how to do things differently. Blame is an escape from responsibility and a way to give away your power. If what happens in your life is everybody else's fault, then why is it that you're the only one that's been there every time? If they're the ones with the problems, why are you the one with the pain? The issue that had Richard feeling so much pain was his "why is this happening to me again" question. which so many of us ask repeatedly as we go through life. It does not matter what the actual event in the outside world is. It could be a combination of relationship issues, employment problems, financial difficulties, or any number of other possibilities. No matter what the circumstances, there is always one common factor. The person having the experience is always involved. Pain, like all feelings, is under the control of the person experiencing it. However, if we refuse responsibility, it will seem that others inflict our pain upon us and that it is, therefore, inescapable. The pain Richard was experiencing was a result of an internal process. It was not caused by others. In order for Richard to heal, it was essential that he step apart from his internal dialogue that convinced him that everyone else was the problem in his life. He had to let go long enough to hear something other than what was going on in his head. I hear you saying that you've had many unhappy experiences in your relationships, and I understand that your mind makes it look like the source of your pain is outside of you. To think that the cause is external is confusing the trigger for your pain with the mechanism that delivers it. The pain you feel is not dependent on outside events, and no one but you can create what you feel inside.
You're just handing me more guilt. And all I want now is to make sure that what I've been going through doesn't happen again.
When I introduced Richard to the idea that we're each responsible for our own pain, he heard, as many of us do, when someone points out that we may have erred, something different. I spoke of responsibility. He interpreted my words to mean other than what I intended. This brought to light an essential element in the healing process. There is a difference between what happens in the world and the mind's interpretation of those events. One triggers feelings, the other causes them. Grasping this concept is a key to personal empowerment and the release of pain. What Richard perceived as the cause of his unhappiness was nothing more than a trigger that served to bring to awareness an experience stored within him, one which he had repeated so often it was now old and familiar. Richard, if you want to create your life differently, you must live from a place of knowing that you are the root cause of all that you experience. Knowing that you are the cause in your life rather than continuously being triggered into old patterns is a source of empowerment. The thought that we are responsible for our lives can be difficult at first. He appeared to flip-flop between his hunger for understanding and his resistance to taking responsibility. For instance, Richard, a few minutes ago, I spoke to you of responsibility. What you heard was guilt, fault, and blame. As you listened to your internal dialogue, it informed you of the potential pain inherent in being to blame. Next came the defenses you've built against being at fault and guilty, your mind's interpretation of responsibility. The reason you don't escape your pain when you leave town or a relationship is that the pain is internal and you take it with you when you go. The fact that you can hide your pain successfully does not mean that it's gone. There is a toll for hanging on to a negative energy, even when it is not being consciously experienced. Anyone who just says the right words can trigger what you are trying to hide from yourself. Your pain is caused by the energy you are holding, not by them.
I don't get this cause and trigger stuff.
Let's see if an example will help to make sense of that. Imagine we place a person from the jungle beside a river and ask them to figure out what causes a drawbridge to open. He observes, time after time, that the bridge goes up when a boat arrives. He also notes that when the boat passes, the bridge lowers. Our observer, not being familiar with bridges, comes to the obvious conclusion that boats cause bridges to go up. We know boats can't cause bridges to move either up or down, though they are the trigger that begins the process. Being familiar with bridges, we know the bridge tender sees a boat and puts the bridge's internal mechanism into motion with the flip of a switch. The switch delivers power to a motor, and that in turn causes the bridge to go up. What if we assign our observer the job of making sure the drawbridge remains down forever? If he clings to the false idea that boats cause bridges to go up, he certainly has his work cut out for him. To accomplish his goal, he may have to change the direction of every boat that approaches, potentially every boat in the world. If, on the other hand, he understands that there is an internal mechanism lifting the bridge, he only needs to get inside the control room and clip one wire. The bridge will remain forever still.
I see what you mean, Michael, and forgive me for being blunt. But so what?
Richard, this is a key. This is a major key, this idea. Your reality arises from inside of you. My words are just a trigger for what shows up in your mind. The word responsibility does not include guilt, fault, and blame, though that is what you heard. You must choose to take responsibility for your feelings and what goes on inside of you if you are ever going to change the patterns in your life and heal. My intention was to assist Richard in seeing that we all have a system of beliefs and ideas which is at the root of our reality structure. Most people talk to themselves all the time, yet remain totally unaware that they're engaged in an inner dialogue which both reviews and reinforces their beliefs about life. Some people are continuously figuring out how to justify themselves in that review before an inner judge made up of their parents, spouses, religious authorities, and any number of other people. What would the judge say if he saw me doing this? They ask themselves. Our internally generated reality and the nature of our continuous silent dialogue operate consistently and automatically, informing the basis of our decisions in life, even the seemingly unimportant or trivial. I demonstrated the presence of Richard's internal dialogue by using the example of his reaction to the word responsibility. He was unaware that the ideas of guilt, fault, and blame came from his self-talk, his own silent speech. More importantly, it had never occurred to him that the reality in his mind did not necessarily match the reality shared by others in his life. Richard, our decisions in life arise from our internal reality and contribute to both creating events in our lives and generating our feelings about these events. To a great extent, people go through life oblivious to the impact of these inner beliefs and ideas on what happens. I invited Richard to look into the concept that our inner realities and self-talk are governing forces behind the life experiences we create. I suggested he examine his silent dialogue to determine its thrust. Many people have lives that include circumstances vastly different from what they would consciously choose. It frequently happens that an individual's self-talk and external talk are focused on what they do not want, and so they create their experiences out of avoidance. Avoidance makes an issue the number one priority in your mind because it focuses your energy on whatever you're avoiding. Richard appeared to be getting comfortable, doing some letting go. He leaned forward, resting his elbows on his knees, and was listening intently when a smile floated across his face.
I'm not the only one that talks to himself all the time.
No, you're not alone. You can become more aware and take charge of your internal process if you so choose. Correcting what happens on the inside is the key to creating changes on the outside. Until you take charge of your internal reality structure, you're bound to keep re-experiencing whatever you're trying to avoid, whatever's stored in your mind. Hiding what you don't want to experience inside guarantees a repeat performance.
How do I create the changes I want?
The first step is to correct your internal dynamics. I would suggest you change your thoughts about new ideas and let go of the chatter in your head that keeps you from hearing them. It's safe and healing to hear new ideas, and by doing your inner work, you will change some of the core interactions you have with life. The next step in the process of changing your internal reality is to be responsible for your self-talk. If it doesn't change, then experiences keyed to your old thoughts will keep repeating. Richard's admission that many times he had experienced the anger he was currently feeling was an indication that his self-talk was helping him repeatedly recreate some of the same realities in his life. By changing your internal dialogue, your reality structure will change, and so will what you attract into your life.
It sounds like you're saying that in order to change the output, I have to change the focus and the input.
You've got it, Richard. Everyone knows that in order to change the output of a system, the input needs to change. It does not seem to be common knowledge, however, that in order to change the input of the human system, the focus needs to change. You change your focus by changing your self-talk and where you put your attention. When you take charge of what happens on the inside, you regain your power. If you think you need to stop other people from making you mad, you're going to have to change everyone who could potentially trigger your anger, and that is an endless task.
Tell me about it. To date, my efforts to change others have been futile. But I don't like being the one who has to do all the changing, the one who has to do all the work. What about them? I want them to do their fair share.
The parts of your life which don't work for you now can be changed by simply doing the work we're discussing. That no one else has to change in order for you to feel good is probably the best news you will ever hear. You are the one who will have to do the work for you to be empowered. It's unnecessary to run away from life and keep cycling into the hopelessness you're experiencing now. There is something you can do, and it is your healing process. As far as others are concerned, if they're in pain, they will have to find their own willingness. They will have to do their own changing and engage in the process themselves in order to experience their healing and empowerment, in order to change their lives. Two simple rules to remember, Richard, are: if I'm in pain, I'm in error, number one. Number two, anyone who is in pain has work to do. Richard's confusion about how to create new experiences in life without changing other people is typical of the way most of us see the world. In every difficulty between people, there are two conflicting realities, two people in pain, two who must take responsibility for themselves in order to heal. A common avoidance tactic is pointing the finger to what someone else has not done while leaving one's own work incomplete. Richard let me know that what I said seemed to make sense, but he was confused by the fact that his negative feelings only happened when he was with the women in his life. His hostility seemed to quiet as he expressed skepticism. I talked about how feelings are easier to hide when there's no one around to trigger them. I reminded him of the bridge analogy, and that the bridge remains down when there is nothing to trigger its potential to elevate. We spoke of the work of a former IBM research scientist, Marcel Vogel, who was able to measure the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. Richard, I like to call those energy waves the psychic megaphone. Every reality in your mind sets up an energy wave to attract people who are in tune with your reality. The people we attract then trigger the reality within us, but the trigger does not cause our feeling, it only resonates what's already there. Richard and I explored just whom he was calling with his psychic megaphone to serve as his trigger. The primary area of examination was his long history of unhappy involvement with women. As we did so, he hooked into some strong emotions while he talked about his list of unresolved resentments.
I've drawn some real winners. The women I'm attracted to seem very warm and loving, but only for a while. Then all of a sudden, they become distant. And no matter what I do, I can't seem to get their attention. That makes me very frustrated and sad. Then I really get angry, and then I attack.
Richard had blamed the women in his life for his feelings of sadness and anger, and was confused about why he only felt those feelings when he was in relationships.
How? How could it not be their fault?
Once you grasp that the ability the mind has to set up and distort its images, I think you will see how perception can be so far off base. One of the difficulties in understanding and seeing through our distortions is that we attempt to gain clarity without cleaning up the device that's doing the distorting, our own minds. One historical method to get past the inherent distortions in the mind is the parable, a word which in Aramaic means parallel meaning. A parable engages the mind with its literal meaning, while the underlying message, which cannot be directly taught, bypasses the intellect and is understood by the part of us that is more than a mind. I'd like to share a parable designed to assist in grasping how limited current human beliefs are. It also helps build the brain cells necessary for functioning in a totally different way, with different realities guiding us. Imagine a two-dimensional creature, one that only knows length and width. There is no height in her world. Length and width are the only dimensions she sees. We want to play basketball with this creature. As we introduce the basketball into her space, imagine yourself in her position. You have a limited view of what's going on in the world. You can see only the length and width of things. Your ability to perceive is narrowed by one dimension from your normal human perception. From a flat context, a three-dimensional perspective and understanding is impossible. When the basketball is moved into the two-dimensional creature space, what does she see?
She's going to experience a flat line. Actually, perhaps just a dot at first, then a series of flat planes until she gets to the other end of the ball, and then it becomes a dot again.
Notice that to our two-dimensional friend, while she experiences something that does not exist. When she sees a series of flat planes pass by, she sees something take place that never actually happened. A basketball is not a series of flat planes, though she experiences it as such. It is a spherical object. Now, let's go one step further. The two-dimensional creature has invented, in her experience of the basketball, a thing called time. For you and me, the basketball is just there. There is no experience of time involved. Since her perception is limited and cannot encompass the whole ball at once, she experiences one part of the ball first and another last. This is how time is invented. Suddenly, a thing that for you and me is a single experience requiring no time becomes time-bound. What for us happens in the same instant seems to be a number of different, separate experiences for a creature with limited perception. You might imagine that the two-dimensional creature names her separate experiences. She calls her first one Joe, another Mary. Each aspect of the ball, as it comes into her awareness, becomes something different. Its size, shape, nature, and character change with each perspective. As a result of limited perception, she invents and experiences a world that doesn't exist. Now, that one can be a tough one for the human mind to grasp, and it is an important principle to recognize. If your perception is limited, you can experience something that never happened except as a perceptual reality in your mind. We are often taught to experience perceptual realities that don't exist anywhere except in our minds. We are also taught to externalize, to believe that those realities are true in the world outside of us when they are not. Imagine our two-dimensional friend's parents teaching her about basketballs. She's read all the history books. She's studied the basketball experiences of all the two-dimensional creatures. What does all this past speak of but events that never happened? A written chronicle of an experience that doesn't exist does not make it true. Basketballs simply do not exist as a series of events separated by time. They only appear to exist that way because of limited perception. Whenever one dimension is missing in a perceptual system, the output of the system is always distorted. Here's the question. Is it possible, Richard, that having limited perception about an event, we could experience things that didn't happen?
Well, I guess so.
How do I go about assisting our two-dimensional friend to bypass the false realities in her mind so she can experience an actual basketball? Do you think that if I talk with her and explain what a basketball is, you know, what it's really about, that we'll be able to get her to come and play basketball with us? Is our explanation going to make any sense to her? When we tell her that her experience never happened, do you think she might be offended?
I can hear her now. Who do you think you are? I've experienced the flat planes. I know.
The difficulty, of course, is that she has experienced the basketball as a series of flat planes. How do you explain to her that she has seen something that doesn't exist? What do we do with that? Can we teach her about basketballs? Is it possible to give her enough descriptions of a basketball that she will give up all of her two-dimensional history, her experience, everything her parents' history and all of her authorities have taught her? Do you think she'll say, okay, I believe you, I've been all wrong? Not highly likely. Do you think any number of words that she can understand will explain the real meaning of the basketball to her? Obviously not, because her whole vocabulary is based on limited experiences and distortions of two-dimensional creatures. Her words only reflect the realities with which she is familiar. There are no words in her language for the three-dimensional perspective of a basketball. Think about this in our human terms. Do we have words for what we haven't experienced? No. We only have words for the experiences we have in common. If we were Floridians who'd never seen snow, how many descriptive words might we have for it? Perhaps three or four, which would be adequate for our experiences with snow. We wouldn't have a lot of descriptors because snow is not a major part of our lives. But if we go to Alaska and interview an Eskimo, things would be different. I understand they have some 70-plus words for snow. It's an important part of their environment. If in Alaska I'm going out to do some cross-country travel and you describe the snow conditions inaccurately, I might use the wrong snowshoes and perish. The realities present in a mind and the words used to represent those realities tend to be limited by the experiences of that mind. Let's imagine our two-dimensional friend makes the shift and experiences playing basketball. Is there any way she can explain to her friends what a basketball really is? Can you imagine her excitement? She's broken the chain of history and now comprehends the true meaning of a basketball. She approaches her friends and says, with a display of enthusiasm, "I finally know the truth about basketballs. They are, wait a minute. There aren't any words in our vocabulary that accurately describe the basketball. How can I speak to you about what I've experienced?" You might imagine her saying things like, "You know, there are so many things that I want to say to you, but you cannot hear them."
All the words from our world aren't going to be of any use in her world because the words she knows, though based on the same actuality, describe a totally different reality.
I agree, and this addresses both your question, how can life be so different from the way I perceive it, and our friend's question, how can the basketball be other than a series of flat planes separated by time?
Well, now, how do you get around this predicament?
Well, the best way I know is to persuade her to question everything she's been taught and experienced about basketballs. If she can recognize that nothing she has experienced ever happened in the way she has seen it, she has a chance of opening to a new perspective. If you can get her to remove every reality ever accepted by her mind and open to a fresh view of basketball, she might make the leap. We spoke of the idea expressed by Einstein that we live in a four-dimensional world. Are we as human beings actually in the position of the two-dimensional creature? Is our basketball called the world? Are we missing at least one perceptual dimension? Does that keep us from experiencing the world as it actually is? If so, could we study enough, or would we even have any words about the actual world? Are we required to give up all of our experiences from the past in order to step into the truth about life?
You know, what you present is sensible, but I don't comprehend the questions, nor do I have any answers to them. Just trying to think about what you're saying is bewildering.
Well, Richard, I ask these questions not to elicit answers, but to invite you to suspect everything you think you know or have experienced. Until we accept responsibility and grasp the truth about life, we make up all sorts of realities that are not true. Many people live in a perceptual world that contains reference points to the actual world, but at the same time are void of truth about actuality. Perception is an internal, made-up story which is externalized. It's overlaid over the actual world. This action destroys the ability to experience actuality. People tend to cling tightly to their false perceptions as though life itself depends on them, which, in a sense, it does. The false life lived by many people is dependent on keeping the truth hidden. Hence, truth is its greatest enemy. We are born with a deep craving for love. Truth is required to experience love. If the truth is not allowed, love and happiness are impossible. When we deny truth, we engage in an insane cycle as we inflict pain on ourselves and miss out on the gifts life is offering us. Feelings are the feedback mechanism that tells us if we're in accord with or out of step with truth. And there's a quote, actually there are two quotes I'd like to share with you. One that happened in a play called Mass Appeal. A fellow named Bill Davis wrote that play. And the thought that he presented there was, now that the truth has been told, there's room for real love. Mahatma Gandhi, in his book India of My Dreams, says this, "All our activities should be centered in truth. Truth should be the very breath of our life. When once this stage is reached, all other rules of correct living will come without effort, and obedience to them will be instinctive. But without truth, it is impossible to observe any principles or rules of life." Feelings are the primary feedback mechanism for the human being. The goal of this work is to present tools with which to explore life, feelings, and the truth about the world. Our next goal is to demonstrate how to use these tools and inspire each person we contact to put them to work. Let's look at feelings from a different perspective than the norm. Feelings come from within.
Mm-hmm.
No one can make you feel angry, sad, afraid, or anything else. Others, however, can certainly trigger the cause of the feelings you experience. It takes a significant shift of mind to see that the cause of pain is internal. Grasping the truth of this premise is difficult because most have spent their entire lives investing in the belief that someone else has the power to make them feel. The first step required to integrate any new idea is to let go of conflicting beliefs. No one can simultaneously take responsibility for his or her life while blaming someone else. Once the commitment is made to be responsible, the output of the internal mechanism is free to change. Reality changes. Richard, freeing yourself from the belief that any person, place, thing, event, or circumstances causes you to feel requires a new look at reality and an undoing of the clouds of the past. When you're angry, you've caused your own anger. When there's fear, the fear is of your own making.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Why would I make myself angry? How could I make myself angry? My feelings are a result of what's happened to me in my life.
Richard, would you be willing to do an experiment that's designed to give you a direct experience of what causes your feelings?
Sure.
Once you do this, there's no turning back to blame because its conclusion is so simple. It can be denied, but only temporarily. The direct experience lies in the mind as a seed that sooner or later bears the fruit of responsibility for every aspect of your life.
I'm really not sure that I'm ready for that, but I guess it's time. Let's go for it.
Okay, if you would, just close your eyes. I'm going to ask you to let yourself feel some feelings. First, let yourself feel sadness. Intensify the sadness. And then take a deep breath and let go of the sadness. Now let yourself feel anger. Intensify the anger. Take a deep breath and let go of your anger. Now go to the feeling of fear. Intensify the fear. Take a deep breath and let go of the fear. And let yourself feel pain. Place your hand wherever you're feeling that pain. At this moment, Richard placed his hand on his forehead as he held his breath. Now, open your eyes, Richard. Notice where your hand is. Your hand is showing you where you hold the energy that causes your pain. If you learn how to change that energy, healing happens. If you don't, that's where your disease processes will tend to manifest.
Well,
let me just go through the rest of the exercise before we get into a discussion.
Okay.
Just go ahead and close your eyes again, if you would, just for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Take a deep breath. Just let yourself totally let go of the sadness, the fear, the anger, and the pain. And let yourself go to the feeling of joy, aliveness. And open your eyes.
That feels better.
How did you feel each of the feelings that you just had, Richard?
Well, I recalled an experience that had caused those feelings in me previously.
And what did you do to recall that experience? What specific mechanism did you use?
Well, I don't know that I'm sure of what you're asking.
Well, what happened in your mind to get you to each of the feelings you just felt?
Well, I thought about something that caused those feelings. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Notice, to feel a feeling, you had to think. You had a thought, right?
Well, yeah.
Feelings are shadows of thoughts, your thoughts. In the last 2 minutes, you had several different feelings, right?
Yes.
Okay. Whose thoughts caused those feelings?
No, mine, I guess. But I had those feelings because of the event I thought about, not because of the thoughts I had.
Yeah, it sure looks that way, Richard, but I think it actually works differently. What was one of the scenes you thought of to feel anger?
I just had to think about my wife leaving me and being alone as a result of her action.
Now, what if you were to think about her leaving and at the same time hold the thought, I'm ready to do my whole life differently. What an opportunity to heal.
I'd never do that, Michael.
Well, after this experience, you might just change your mind. Give it a try. See what happens. Get into thinking about her leaving and allow yourself to generate thoughts of excitement about doing your life differently and the opportunity to heal. Think those thoughts as true, exciting thoughts about your life and see what happens.
Well, I'm not feeling angry. Actually, I feel anticipation about how life can be. But that's not true. I'm still angry with her.
Notice, Richard, it's your thought about the event, not the event itself, that causes your feelings. You can choose to hold on to your angry thoughts, but when you do, you get the original. Your wife just gets the carbon copy. Your thoughts impact you first. Take notice, she's not here to know what you're thinking, but each thought has an impact on you. Your feelings inform you of the nature of the impact of the energy of your thoughts on your physiology. If you're in pain, you're the one who's in error.
My thoughts cause me to feel? That's a novel concept.
Well, let's take the principle a step further. If yesterday, last week, last month, or last year, you had negative feelings or pain, whose thoughts caused you to feel that pain?
Well, mine.
If tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, you experience that quality of pain, whose thoughts will be the cause of your pain?
Well, obviously mine.
Do you expect to experience pain at some time in the future?
Well, of course. Won't everyone?
Well, I'm not sure it's necessary, Richard. Why would you inflict pain on yourself?
I don't know. Habit, I guess.
Well, there's only one reason. Insanity.
You mean I'm insane?
To the degree that we each inflict pain on ourselves, Richard, we are all insane. The world teaches us insane thought systems, and in doing so, it teaches us to destroy ourselves. If we buy in and think insane thinking is normal, we will reach the conclusion that we have no other choice. Thoughts, I would offer, are a form of energy. Whenever you put a quality of mind energy into your physiology, you get a feeling that corresponds to that quality. Feelings are your feedback mechanism and tell you whether you're engaging in constructive or destructive mind energy. When you make a mistake, the feeling's negative. I would offer that you and I are made in the image and likeness of love, and there is no other reality that belongs in our human experience. Any other reality is a violation of the human structure, and we destroy ourselves when we focus on disintegrative energies. We build our realities, literally, with each piece of mind energy that we engage in. The mind has the amazing capacity to turn our mind energy into the actual images we see. If you put hate, fear, anger, anguish, terror, criticism, condemnation, gossip, slander, or vengeance into your structure, that mind energy will turn into an image in your brain. If you're in denial, you'll think the image is about somebody else, though it comes from your physiology. Every image your mind produces explains where you are. If you can't own that, you will never be able to see yourself accurately, and correction will be impossible. One of the goals of this work is to provide a variety of tools for correction.
Just what do you mean by tools, Michael?
Tools are concrete techniques or actions you can use to resolve upsets or patterns at the moment they occur. They are designed to provide a way to assist in creating joy and unloading the burdens most people accumulate in the course of their daily lives. For instance, taking responsibility is a tool. When you project responsibility onto another, the mind shows you that they are your problem. When you use the tool of responsibility, you resolve that projection because your mind will shift what it shows you about both them and yourself. Being aware that feelings are a guidance system is another tool. When you use that awareness, you tend to look at yourself accurately and are more likely to see yourself truly than blame others if your upset surfaces. A few of the many other tools presented in this work include my commitment, we'll talk about that a little later, breathing, awareness, and forgiveness. I could go on with a long list, but each tool will unfold in its own time.
I'm confused.
I understand. It's a lot to absorb at once, but the principles of this work are really quite simple. The seeming complexity and confusion of learning this new way of thinking come from the habit of holding on to old beliefs, which makes it difficult to integrate new ideas. Confusion does not come from the principles themselves. You know, truth is complex to a complex mind, and it's actually quite simple to a simplified mind. Example, did you learn traditional mathematics when you were in school?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, have you encountered the new math since then?
Yes. I attempted to learn it and teach it to my daughter. Studying it was like going into a foreign world, and I felt pretty stupid when it took me weeks to catch up with her. She's only 12 at the time.
Well, that's my point. With this material, you're being introduced to a whole new way of thinking, a new world, so to speak. You may even get a chance to heal some of that old stupid feeling as you integrate this teaching. There is a saying that you can't do new math with an old math mind, and in the same way, you cannot simultaneously take responsibility for your life while you blame someone else. Once you recognize your feelings are generated by your internal mechanism, you have the key to power over those feelings, and you can take responsibility for them. It is then possible to respond rather than to just react to life's triggers. When you're willing and committed to being responsible, you can change the output of your mind, and that action will change your reality. The way you feel will no longer be dependent on any person, place, thing, event, or circumstance.
That sounds great. What's the catch?
Richard, there's no catch, but there are ideas you have to change. For example, you'll have to be able to see and deal with your hidden pain. You see, someone can only bring up a painful reality if it's already in your mind. It has to be there first. You can't pretend that all is well and continue to deny and hide from your issues. But the fact that someone can trigger anger in you is a sure sign something is hidden. Removing realities from the mind is the original meaning of the word forgive. In this work, when a negative reality is triggered, it is an opportunity to learn true forgiveness. When pain surfaces, if you're honest and in touch with yourself, you will own the upset and seize the opportunity to release that internal reality, the opportunity to forgive. Pain functions to inform us of our errors. False forgiveness is based on the belief that others are responsible for what we feel, and therefore it tends to reinforce that error. To forgive others in this manner, for what happens in your mind leaves your pain intact and the opportunity to heal is lost. Making use of every opportunity to heal is an important decision you can make, and that decision will immeasurably accelerate your process.
Thanks, but I'll pass. If I have a painful reality hiding somewhere in my mind, I'd just as soon leave it there. Thank you.